Hey, what's up, everyone? How you doing? This is Ben Kissel with Henry Zebrowski.
Yeah.
Thank you all so much for giving to our Patreon. Without you, none of this is possible. We love you. Hail yourselves and thank yous. Today's interview, we are very excited to have this fella. He is a professor. He's a doctor. We actually had a chance to meet him in Austin. He's a wonderful man, and his wife gave me an incredible hug. So
let's not focus on the long hug.
We are joined by a scholar of Satanism, demonology, and exorcism at Texas State University. He is also the author of the book Dangerous Games, What the Moral Panic Over Role-Playing Games Says About Play, Religion, and Imagined Worlds. He's also working on a new book that'll be out next year about the Satanic Temple. We are joined by Dr. Joseph Flaycock. Thank you so much, man.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor to be here.
So this is going to be one of those interviews where I think Henry has a lot of questions because I read the words role-playing, and this is right up your alley, Henry.
Absolutely. I love playing the maid, and then I come upon Natalie while she plays the patron of the house.
I don't think it's that. I think it's more, is it D&D? Oh, I don't know what's going on.
That's correct. Honestly, so I'm not really sure where to start. I have so many questions. So you are, first thing I'd like to hit, we read an article recently about the upswing of exorcisms in modern society. Now, you wrote this article, from what I read, was in 2015. Do you feel like we're still on that upswing? Like, and what is the source of it? You did a really good job of elucidating it in the article, essentially saying it seems to be exorcisms come in cycles and like obsession with exorcism comes in cycles. Where do you think we are now in that cycle?
I think right now we're pretty much near the high end of the cycle. The sort of golden age of exorcism was in Europe after the Protestant Reformation, where you had Protestants and Catholics duking it out all over Europe and killing each other. So it does seem that if you're in a period where there's a lot of change happening really fast and a lot of division between kind of different ideologies and worldviews, we're more likely to see demonic possession and exorcism being reported. That's one of the factors.
There was a point that he made in the article that I thought was really interesting, that basically you said a part of it was for the Catholic Church to get an edge to basically being like, we can talk to demons and they fucking listen to us, which is a part of the exorcist thing, where it seems now the Catholic Church is at probably a low point in terms of ideological power, in terms of they don't really control the flow of everything. People are not asking the Pope for like how things should go all the time anymore. So I wonder if this is a good time for exorcism to come back, so they could say, like, we're still the only ones who can beat the demons.
Yeah, I think that the other factor going on with the Catholic Church is, it's a big church. It's hard to hold it together. You've got people on one end that are very progressive and very kind of scientifically minded. You've got people on the other side who feel like we've forgotten about the power of Satan and are more conservative.
I haven't.
Right.
I have not.
I think one thing Pope Francis can do right now, because his policies are relatively progressive and are alienating some of the more conservative Catholics, if he is nice to the exorcists and he kind of throws a bone to the exorcists, that gets him points back with the conservatives, and it's a way he can kind of hold the two factions together.
Right. Well, the interesting thing in your article as well, you mentioned how 57% of people believe in exorcism. And it's interesting because obviously we have a decline, as Henry was alluding to, a decline in religion overall across the board, Catholicism, evangelicals. How can you sort of square the decline of religious belief with the incline of belief in demonic possession? Wouldn't those things have to kind of run concurrent with each other?
Well, I want to clarify that it's not that people are becoming – religious belief isn't going down. Religious affiliation is going down. People still believe in the supernatural and all kinds of things. They just don't want to kind of affiliate themselves with a particular church or denomination. I also think – I think the changing demographics are themselves inspiring an interest in things like demonology and exorcism, because this is a way of kind of – getting some force when you say, oh, the world's going to hell in a handbasket and these kids these days aren't going to church. And now, to prove my point, are some demons that this lady from my church is going to speak on behalf of.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Some dude shows up in a fucking your pretty face is going to hell costume. Pope Francis gets to come out with the sword and poke him in the belly a couple times, and everyone's like, he still got it. I also like the idea of maybe he tossed that kid a couple of bones for the Pope to put his hands on him, and the kid started fucking shimmying back and forth. I think obviously, there's some kind of collusion. There's some kind of wrestling-like situation that was set up.
Oh, yeah, Pope wrestling. That's the hit new show on Saturday nights.
Did
Pope
you read
wrestling.
That at the very end of the article? Is that they actually look like the Pope did, Pope Francis did a public exorcism where he laid hands upon what seemed to be a demon-infested child, and the kid did the worm, and everybody else said, congratulations.
I love it. Well, that's what is so interesting about this. Obviously, when it comes to like medicine and clarifying what people have, whether it be bipolar disease or stuff like that, and now we saw the rise of anti-vaxxers. Is there any correlation between that, just skepticism of the medical community, of the psychology in general, and therapy and stuff like that?
I mean, anecdotally, I think that there is. I don't know that someone's ever done any kind of statistical analysis, but you know, sometimes I get emails from people saying, you know, help, I've got a demon, you know, you've got to help me, Dr. Laycock. And sometimes when I Google these people to try to figure out who they are, I will find things like anti-vax sites.
Yeah, right. Yes.
And yes. I don't answer these because I don't want anything bad to happen and to be liable. You know, I think a lot of these people are just bored. I don't think there's anything medically wrong with them. I don't answer those emails.
Now, you also work as the technical consultant for the – can you help me get the name correct for the paranormal research group?
Yeah, these students at Texas State wanted to start a paranormal research group, and you need a faculty advisor to start a student club. So they came to me, and currently they're having like a bake sale so they can buy like electromagnetic equipment or something to.
That is honestly, that is wholesome, and that is, it works. That's how you got to get the community involved. Well, my question is like, so you help consult for a student paranormal research group. Now, in your research, I mean, a part of it is that obviously you have an intellectual slant on the social and historical perspective on exorcisms. Have you gotten to see anything? Have you gotten to do a ride along with the priest? Like, honestly, have you been able to be a part of any of these ceremonies?
No, I really haven't. You know, it's kind of sad. I'm sort of in my armchair hitting the books. There's a couple reasons for this. I mean, if you were a Catholic exorcist, right, you probably would not invite academics to come watch, right?
Right.
I did do a book about conservative Catholics, and I was with them when they were seeing, you know, they said they could see the sun dance in the sky and things like that. But it was very, very hard for me to negotiate entry and kind of gain their trust to where they would talk to me. So it's a hard thing to witness. Right. You get a lot more of that kind of field work from anthropologists who are looking at maybe tribal societies and things like this where spirit possession goes on. I don't really have much firsthand experience. I did see the William Friedkin documentary for what it's worth.
Yes. Yeah, it was pretty sweet. Well, they did fine with it.
What do you think it is, Dr. Laycock, when it comes to – what is this? Obviously, it's a real phenomenon happening. These people are – they feel like they're possessed by something. What do you actually think it is? Or is it a demon? I don't know.
Well, you know, I try to practice what I call epistemological modesty. Epistemological modesty is you leave open the possibility for other things. You don't assume that everything can be reduced to what you see. So with my students, I say we're not here to debate whether demons are real or not. But let's look at these particular cases and see what we can rule out. I think that something is really happening. I think most of the time people are not simply consciously deciding I'm going to act like I'm possessed for a little bit. It'll be fun. But I do think that it is very culturally constructed. You know, we know from historical texts, for example, possessed Catholics act differently from possessed Protestants.
Interesting.
Really?
Possessed Protestants are really freaked out about the Bible because that's the word of God. They don't really care about things like statues of Mary or holy water or something like this. Possessed Catholics have a track record of being very upset by these things because they're regarded as holy objects. So I think that your culture teaches you how to act when you're possessed by a demon. But that doesn't mean that for the people having the experience that it isn't real.
And it seems to be it's more like that. It's the concept of how does history and the world shaped by people that believe demons are real? And what does that mean to society that is still kind of in play?
Yeah, you know, in college I knew a guy with Tourette's and he would scream obscenities. And it was a real condition. He couldn't control it. But the things he would scream were what his culture had taught him, never, ever say these words. So you see the culture kind of interacts with the sort of neurology in these interesting ways.
It's a 50-50 part of it. And I think that when we have talked about on the more wooey-woo side of the occult, is that it truly is 50-50, it seems like. That the phenomenon is attached to a person who maybe is not necessarily... It's not that you want it, because I've never seen a ghost, and all I want to do is see a goddamn ghost.
You want it too much.
I'm seeing it, but the person that is receiving the phenomena seems to be 50% of it, and seems to kind of give in to the phenomena, and so now you have somebody that now, at some point, has become convinced that they are possessed by a demon, and now they're acting it out.
Yeah, and if you look at cultures like, say, voodoo, right, there is a tradition that some people can get possessed and some people can't. And it's just sort of in those cultures, it's regarded almost as a kind of gift.
That you, like, can't be possessed, or that you can be possessed?
Well, so certain people can do it and certain people cannot, right? The gods or the spirits or whatever, they like to possess certain people. Other people, they don't go near. So there's a kind of recognition that some people kind of have that ability and some people do not.
What got you into this world? Is you just interested in the paranormal? Have you ever had an experience?
No, I think I'm a little bit like you, Henry, and kind of I want the experience too bad, so it seems to sort of avoid me.
Honestly, the sad thing is I'm going to end up getting abducted. I'm going to end up getting abducted and possessed by a demon, and my life is going to be over, and you'll be like, tell me about your awesome experience. You'll be like, well, I can't sit down for a month and a half.
Yeah, it's just going to be me pumping you for information, paying for your aggressive hypnotism. It'll probably be the closest we'll ever be as friends.
Yeah, maybe.
But yeah, so you have not. So you just, we're all wannabes.
Exactly. Yeah, we're all wannabes. Those who can't do teach, right?
I guess so, man. Because my apartment complex is incredibly haunted, apparently, and many of my neighbors have seen ghosts. And I bought all the ghost hunting equipment. Natalie's, my wife, has felt energies in the house, and I got fucking nothing.
Again, we are speaking with Dr. Joseph Laycock. He is the author of Dangerous Games: What the Moral Panic Over Role Playing Games Says About Play, Religion, and Imagined Worlds. Can we talk about that a little bit? What about this moral panic? What is going on regarding things like D&D? Because I remember growing up, I grew up real religious, and people really did give power to these games. I just always thought it was kind of nerd stuff, and I had some friends who played it, still do.
it's not nerd stuff, it is imagination exploration.
But going back to Henry, what Henry was talking about with the 50-50, does the moral panic, does the religious community, do they give power to these sorts of, role-playing games and stuff like that? Are they the reasons why they have power?
I mean, on one level they are, because, you know, when these panics started and people started telling stories like people who play this game go insane and they wander around in steam tunnels under their college. Yeah. When those stories spread, everybody started buying this game to see what it was all about. So in that sense, it absolutely helped. Yeah.
One thing now, what I find is interesting, obviously we're in a constant revision of history now, especially. If you look at role-playing games back in the day, what was it? It was me, my cousin Eric. My sister was forced to play. She had to be there. We had to build her a character, and it was always boring because she always did it bad. It was boring. She didn't know
how
to put
together
an exciting
campaign. Maybe your sister didn't want to play with her brother and her cousin in a basement that smelled like rotten milk and urine.
It was fun. It was a fun time to be had. And kind of a couple of my cousin's friends, you know, we obviously created. But a part of what was really nice to me about the original idea of RPGs, which I think is funny in the terms of the how upset people were about them, is that I got to hang out with my friends. And I was like in a group where it's like I was a part of a D&D group with a bunch of comedians. I'm talking a bunch of mid-30-year-olds hanging out for 6 hours at a time, just fucking play D&D. And it was really nice. What do you think is now? Like, it's, I feel like we're almost in almost a worse area where now video games kind of and games kind of want to make you stay home And is that actually more damaging than any psychological or psychic attack from the realm of the indie? Is the constant isolation of sitting home with Red Dead Redemption 2?
No, well, they interact around the globe now, Henry.
I mean, this is a separate issue, right? But there is this kind of paradox that, you know, it used to be in the 70s, there was a great chance that, you know, you could actually get mugged or something really bad could happen to you, and yet parents would just tell their kids, go out and play, right? And now the crime rates are lower than ever, and kids, as far as I can tell, just sit at home on their phones.
But maybe that's why. Maybe that's why the crime, because all the whippersnappers and all the troublemakers are inside now.
Idle hands are the devil's tools.
That's what I'm saying. That's why give them lube, teach them to masturbate. That is a bad idea. That is a bad idea.
I don't think he's a professor, Henry.
I'm sorry.
Again, a scholar of Satanism, demonology, and exorcism. Let's see. So let's talk a little bit more.
Do you play RPGs?
Yeah. No, I grew up in Texas in the 80s, and you know, people would tell me that I was in a satanic cult because I enjoyed this particular hobby. And that was kind of my first realization that adults act like they know what they're talking about and they know everything, and they really don't, right? Because how could anyone possibly think this had something to do with killing children or hurting animals or something?
Yeah, when I'm just literally, I am a elf mage that, then it's sad because then you have to explain about how you have to roll for sneak. Like, you have to explain these things about, like, and the dungeon master, he makes up the rules. And then they're like, oh, maybe you're not in a satanic cult. Maybe I need to beat the shit out of you.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
Because a part of it is, I feel like that we're missing the mystique of the satanic cult. And the idea of being like, it used to be a harboring for young nerd goth boys, especially the ginger variety. We're both like sweet-faced men, right? I mean, Dr. Laycock. So a part of it is that it was a nice defense mechanism to be viewed as evil.
Absolutely, yeah. It gives you that kind of sinister edge that maybe we'll make bullies think twice before they give you a
wedgie. No, Henry has been mugged more than any man I've ever met. No one thought twice, I promise you. Henry is like, I'm a target. He just screams it as he walks down the street like he has Tourette's.
No, until I truly embrace Satanism. Got the shit beat out of us many times, but only because until I embrace Satanism, and then I think it's just because I stayed inside more.
Yes, again, probably, and you move to a nicer neighborhood. When it comes to paranormal activity, do you have any compelling footage? What are you talking to these kids about? I want to know. I want to know where the ghosts at.
Well, I mean, with the student group, it kind of just formed, and what I'm really trying to do is to push them towards doing research that, you know, is of substance and that we can publish, and they're not just filming themselves being scared with a night vision camera,
right?
You know, running around an empty building. And one thing I'm really proud of my students, they went to the library. Texas State is a 100-year-old university. And they went to the library and they said, give us all the copies of the student newspaper going back to the early 20th century. And when people tell us their dorm is haunted or their building is this or that, we're going to go through the archives and we're going to see if people have been reporting this or if something has happened there. And I respect them for doing that. It's not as much fun as going around with magnetic detectors, but I think they're much more likely to produce something interesting.
Well, I feel like if you build into them now the understanding that paranormal psychology and all of that research, any of that theological society stuff is and in fact, incredibly boring. And that's where it starts, that you have to get the base of the boring going. It's like being a police officer where it's not just shooting guys. You know,
oh, no.
You got to fill out all the paperwork and you got to get good at the paperwork. That's what MUFON teaches us, is that you got to get good at the paperwork first and then maybe you could see a UFO if you have enough gas money to get to where the sighting is.
That's right. That's how I would investigate a UFO. Yeah,
you've got to start with it. You got to start with the nuts and bolts. Now, with the kid, now I just love this idea that you get to go and work with these kids and teach them the academic basis of paranormal research. Now, I feel like you do have to give them a touch of the exciting, though. Eventually, you do have to do like one night trip to an abandoned insane asylum just to keep the juices flowing, to keep them in there, and then you send them back to the library.
Well, I want to be really clear. I'm an advisor. I mean, they could do whatever they want, right? My job's mostly just to be like, well, let's not, you know, murder your friend and then try to talk to him on a Ouija board or something. I advise you guys do something differently. But I mean, they're very self-directed, motivated students.
As long as it's just turned into that nut tapping game in order to find out who's the most hashtag savage, then I think will be fine.
Well, I gotta say, I believe that Ouija board. I don't mess with the Ouija board. It's a window to hell. Jesus. And I firmly believe it. It happened to me in high school. What do you think about the Ouija board, or just the ability to interact in general with these things that were like it's just made by Milton Bradley? It's like a toy company, but then of course you know Chucky was made by a toy company too, and he was very violent.
It's a fake film. It's a fiction.
That's true. But what do you think about that? Like the power that we give to sort of tangible objects like that.
Well, I mean, there's a whole history to the Ouija board. This goes back to spiritualism and the mid-1800s. This would be great material for you guys to do an episode on. And, these ghosts are supposedly communicating to people through knocks, right? Like knock once for yes, twice for no.
Right.
And then they said, we can get messages from the ghosts. I'll just read the whole alphabet and the ghost will knock, right? So it'd be like A, B, C, D, right? A, B, N. Right, and it takes like an hour to get a message from a ghost that way. So people in the 1800s start inventing all these machines to talk to the ghosts faster. And this eventually leads to what we got as the Ouija board. And for a long time, the Ouija board was kind of just like a parlor trick. It wasn't really seen as anything sinister. It was really the film The Exorcist that kind of cemented in everybody's mind. This thing is deadly and
okay.
It's not your loved ones talking to you. It's demons and they're just trying to trick you. There's a guy here in Austin named Brandon Hodge who has, I think, the world's largest collection of these devices, including things going back 100 years or more called like spiritoscopes and things like this. And his take as an expert on this is he says, I do think that this is subconscious, right? It's called like idiomotor phenomenon or something. People are subconsciously moving these planchettes themselves.
Okay.
He says that's pretty amazing though, that human beings have the ability to do that without kind of knowing that they're doing it.
Right.
We just did an interview with Peter Biebergall about his book about spiritual technology, and a part of what it was a really interesting idea that essentially the spirit realm understands where we are at technologically and understands that essentially they have to wait till we catch up. And that a part of where we're at is that they're waiting for the instruments to get sensitive enough. And because EVP technology has gotten so much better, certain things that cameras have gotten so much better, is that essentially they're waiting for their moment to be captured. And it just would take us to catch up to them.
Yeah, I'm reading that book right now. It's really fascinating one. Strange Frequencies, right?
Yes.
Yeah, what do you think about that? Is there – do you give a lot of credit or what is that? Credence? Do you give any credence to that idea?
I mean, this is kind of getting beyond my area. I'm mostly in kind of sociology and history.
Right.
I think these are interesting ideas. I don't really know how to – assess them, right? I can't prove or disprove what's happening in the spirit
you
world.
You do it, you doctor! I thought you were a doctor! You make the man do the science, Kissel!
I mean, I'm trying. Well, my minor was sociology.
Wow.
Isn't that interesting?
That is great.
Anyway, what are some of the sociological impacts on your studies, on demonology and the paranormal activity and things like that? What do you think? How does society?
How is it informing us?
These things?
Yeah, like where are we? Like honestly, even with the rise of exorcism, the idea of this satanic panic seems to kind of almost be leaving the country. Especially look at like Sabrina, the teenage witch, like revamp where Hail Satan, like Satanism is becoming like pretty normal. It's like cute. Witch culture is huge. Like we're in this. We seem to be in a new obsessive phase with the paranormal, which seems to happen every 100 years or so. And I wonder what that will mean, and when eventually we will pass this into will we be taking elevators to space or will we be dead?
Yeah, there's a scholar in Italy named Massimo Intravigne, and he just wrote this enormous book called Satanism: A Social History. And he actually does argue in that book it's a pendulum, and it goes back and forth between the anti-Satanists go too far, and then no one takes them seriously, and they think Satanism is kind of interesting, and then the Satanism goes too far, and the anti-Satanists come after it. I mean, these kind of grand theories of how history works are really easy to poke holes in, but it's an interesting idea, and it does kind of account for some of those patterns you're describing.
I just wonder where we're at. I just wonder what will happen at the next turn. Like, that's what it is.
Well, judging by that, then, wouldn't the next turn have to be more of a conservative revolution? More of a Christian revolution, as Henry was alluding to with Sabrina the Teenage Witch. Hail Satan has become something cute, like parents say it to their kids, I guess, because we've heard them say it to them. It is no longer the dangerous world that it once was. Do you see the rise of Christianity coming back?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, Pizzagate really shocked me as someone who studies satanic panic, right, that things would reach that level again. You know, there's a book called The End of White Christian America, and the thesis of that book basically is that demographically, white Christians are not the majority anymore. In fact, here in Texas, we're already a minority-majority state.
Right.
And so what we're seeing right now is a kind of attempt to sort of shore up that power that used to exist just through demographics by doing things like building Ten Commandments monuments where there'd never been one before on state capitals and things like this.
Yeah, it seems like a desperate grab.
It does, right? And it's triggered its own backlash. I see groups like the Satanic Temple as sort of responding to this this kind of almost a sort of death rattle, right, from trying to preserve this kind of white Christian hegemony.
Well, they are very much so trying to be rational, right? The idea that we are rational, we talk about the First Amendment and all of this is very political. They are very much are trying to distance themselves from the origins, the Church of Satan, and sort of the circus / ritual magic / performative edge of Satanism, which they felt. I think now they think that kind of hurts their image. Like the idea of someone wearing a cowl with demon horns and the naked woman altar and stuff, even though technically that's the fun part. That's the best part.
Yeah, that's the good stuff, I would think.
But. That's what I think. I feel like we can do both.
I would
Can't
think
we
so.
Do both? But I do you feel like what's the future for the Satanic Temple? Like looking at them, like do you feel like they will become a sort of actual part of the American / international fabric in terms of the religious fabric, or will it stay a fringe element because of this?
Well, I mean, it's hard to tell, but, you know, the Satanic Temple has gotten way bigger than people realize because people only see them when they're in the news and they're doing these campaigns and they make press releases. The Austin chapter of the Satanic Temple is 50 or 60 people. They have picnics together with their kids. They have book clubs. Like, they're doing all this normal stuff that religious communities do. And I feel like they're in this kind of double bind, right, where people are – on the one hand, they're saying, oh, well, you're just trolls. You don't really mean it. You're not really Satanist. They actually do have private rituals where they do have naked people, and it does get pretty shocking. But if they talk about that, okay, now you're not trolls, but now you're like really scary Satanists, right? We don't want
to. That's what gets me mad, because the satanic illumination, Luciferian honesty, you're supposed to say, yes, we also do these rituals.
You can't say that in front of a 7-year-old.
Well, they got to learn now how they're supposed to get trained for the rituals.
But that's how the pendulum swings back, because all these kids growing up in a satanic temple are going to become evangelical Christians. They are all going to rebel. Their parents will be like, I'm not having sex until I'm 30, Dad. And then they'll be like, no. That's how all that stuff works.
They have a Facebook group called Raising Hell about how to raise satanic children. And somebody did post, you know, what do I do? My kid wants to go to church. And I don't want to tell them they can't make their own choices, but I really hope they choose not to go to this church.
That kid is going to start going to church.
Man, punk That's really sure. lost, didn't it? Punk lost it. And you're like, they really lost grip on this country. Of course, but then allow them to refine Satanism like I did by going to church. Because then you start going to church, and then you realize, oh, I don't want to listen to that maladjusted man of society that has been chosen to be God's superhero in front of me in a uniform. Maybe this is strange, and why is he so interested in having me speak to him alone in his office hours, when no, for a fact, his office hours are over at 4.
Huh. Interesting. But that is, yes, be careful. I don't like when people get their children involved in any religion. Let them make their own choices. That's what I say.
Kids can't make their own choices. They're children. No, kids are slaves. Kids
no, they're
are
not.
They're brought
Are
back
you a
forth.
Farmer from 1903? That's what they thought. Anyway. We are speaking with Dr. Joseph Laycock. He is a scholar of Satanism, demonology, and exorcism at Texas State University. He is also the author of a book, Dangerous Games, What the Moral Panic Over Role-Playing Games Says About Play, Religion, and Imagined Worlds. He also has a book coming out next year about the Satanic Temple, which I think will be extremely interesting.
Now, speaking of ride-alongs, have you got to be a part of any of the rituals? Have you got to see any of the private stuff? Did you hang with them, or are you doing it from exterior?
I've spent a fair amount of time with the folks up in the headquarters with Salem, but I'm also trying to visit all the local chapters of the Satanic Temple and just see more kind of what it's like being a Satanist in, say, Indiana, right, or San Marcos,
honestly,
Texas.
Honestly, man, we just drove through Indiana, and I understand why people would be looking for something else, looking for a different kind of ideology and maybe an identity that makes them feel cool and powerful, because it was sad. Wouldn't you say, Henry, it was maybe one of the sadder
states? That's the worst place in the world, unfortunately.
Not because of the people.
No, absolutely not. Indiana, just as a city, as a state, needs a redo. Like, they need a mulligan.
But what were some of the differences did you see with the Salem Satanists and the folks in Indiana? Because obviously they do have different cultures and different sort of perspectives, as you were talking about earlier. Did you see any big differences between the two groups?
Well, so the Indiana chapter, they adopted a highway this year.
Oh, good.
So there's a sign.
Honestly,
saying,
someone needs to adopt the entire, just take the whole, adopt
take
the state,
whole state,
nurse it
take
back to health.
But I just can't imagine Satanists outside. We like comfort, man. It's just like this whole thing is that we need to, you have to have like memory foam shoes.
But you know, a big part of what they did is they say, you know, we have these big picnics. We call it Lunch with Lucifer, and we bring our kids. And they said, you know, this is Indiana. We're family-oriented people. We're just Satanists. Right.
Okay. Sure.
So they had some of that kind of Midwest wholesomeness, right? And then I talked to the New York City chapter. A lot of the New York City chapter actually left recently over kind of different political visions. But when I talked to them, and they said, well, you know, we're in New York City. There aren't really any kind of conservative Christians to fight here. We just raise money. We hold events and we raise money, and then we give that to legal cases that are being fought in other states.
That's smart. You know what's got a really vibrant group? Honestly, I spent a lot of time in Atlanta and with the chapter in Atlanta, and it's a really good, vibrant group because it's a fun mix. Because Atlanta is a good, it's the best of all satanic duality, because you've got Atlanta, which is a liberal hub inside Georgia, which is a very intense state. And it's got that good tension that you want for magic.
Yeah, they tried to start an after-school Satan club in Cobb County outside of Atlanta.
Yes.
I'm just saying it's going to ruin the whole mystique if you're doing it after school. You don't want anything attached to school.
I'm bringing back the cowls. I want the cowls. I want the organ music. I want a guy like dressed as Vincent Price hanging out. I want the vampira women with their breasts out, the cleavage all pumped up.
Is that still there? I'm not sure if that's so in vogue anymore.
Would you not say there's a true satanic trope of a tiny fat man with a gorgeous woman? When I meet Satanists, that's how I develop my life.
There is some basis to that stereotype, I would say, yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Joseph Laycock. Definitely going to check out this book. Please, and if you're out there and you want to check this book out, please go out there and support this man. Buy the book and learn a bunch of stuff.
We really want to talk about, and we'd love to talk with you further about all of this stuff, because this is very obviously, because now you're just kind of eyeballs deep in it. Do you know what you want after this? Is there any other kind of esoteric group you're going to go for, or are you just going to, is it now you're going to switch to like golf humor books like Dave Barry?
Well, I mean, hopefully I'll get tenure next year. And after I get tenure, then I can do really weird stuff.
Yeah, dude,
you can do whatever you want.
Right.
What I'm interested right now in is actually hoaxes, cases where we know that people have deliberately faked something and where it sort of becomes nevertheless kind of part of our paranormal culture. I'm thinking about things like the Cotingley fairies. Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, or Slender Man, which was created in jest and led to this actual crime.
Right.
Well,
right.
Then the thing is, then it comes into the weird psychic. I think Slender Man's very interesting because, in a way, we are making him real. Like, in a way, because so many people are now acting in the name of Slender Man and committing crimes in the name of a meme. In a way, it's like, well, if you're going to get stabbed over it, then it's as real as anything else.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. Those kids think it's real, and still a lot of people do. What do you think about that phenomenon, that internet phenomenon now, where globally these things do come to fruition? They do come to manifest themselves in reality.
Well, I mean, this is, you know, not speaking paranormally, but just sociologically, this is absolutely true. And folklorists call this ostension, right? A great example of this, the legend that people put cyanide in Halloween candy. As far as we know, no one ever did this until Houston, Texas, 1974. This guy took a big life insurance policy out on his son and poisoned him with Halloween candy, thinking, I'll get away with it because everybody poisons kids on Halloween. So you tell the story enough, it will come to life.
Interesting. Right.
That is actual magic. That is what magic is. It is taking will and creating reality out of will. So it's interesting how we seem to kind of spit it out as a society.
Right.
And it's somewhere between the two, right? Because obviously it's paranormal, but it fits right into sociology, which is just how our brains work. We like telling stories, and then what's better than a fake story than a real story?
Yeah, I hear you, Henry. Like, once you kind of do enough sociology to see how reality really is socially constructed, then kind of what is magic actually becomes very confusing, right? You could have things that are magic for all intents and purposes, and it's just the power of society to shape how we see the world.
Absolutely.
Do you believe anything about the concept that there was, they use the term mega ritual, but I don't know if it's true or not, but the idea of subconsciously places like 4chan helped the rise of Donald Trump? That's something about the idea of you connecting him to these random number generating devices and the use of the word kek in substitute of the word lol, because kek, but then kek actually translates to the Egyptian god of chaos, which is shaped like a frog, and then kek got attached to Pepe the frog. It's very interesting.
Yeah, actually, the journal that I edit is going to have an issue coming out next year on magic in the age of Trump. And it's going to look at Keck and these people doing hexes to stop Trump, and exorcists trying to counter the hexes. So we really are in kind of an unprecedented age of magical warfare.
It's a great – want to see the front lines, because it's a silly group.
I want to see them in Washington. I want everyone out of the Capitol building. I want them in. I want magical wizards fighting it out on C-SPAN. C-SPAN would be the greatest television network in history.
Can you imagine if it was filled with shamans
it would be incredible.
And priests?
The one thing that does kind of terrify me about that notion, my parents, growing up evangelical, we heard about the end of the world constantly. My mom used to say, it doesn't matter how school goes, you never know when God's coming back. And it does make me feel like they are subconsciously requesting nuclear war or something, where they're just like, they want to see the end of time so bad that I think subconsciously they're kind of like promoting ideas that might lead to that.
Absolutely. And this is why I think that undergraduates need to take a course in religious studies so they can understand how those worldviews affect things global warming doesn't matter, right, if the rapture is going to happen in the next 5 or 10 years, right? So that's going to affect the way your neighbors vote or see mainstream political issues.
Absolutely.
God, that
awesome. Well, you got to come back on the show. You come back on the show, please, when you're finished with your book about the Satanic Temple. Again, folks, we just talked to Joseph Laycock. He is a scholar of Satanism, demonology, exorcism at Texas State University. And check out his book. Go out there and buy his book, Dangerous Games, What the Moral Panic Over Role-Playing Games Says About Play, Religion, and Imagined Worlds. Thank you so much for being on the show, dude. Really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's been awesome.
And thank you so much.
And thank your wife for that incredible hug.
Ugh, stop it. Stop saying that.
That's nice. It was a nice – I'm not saying it in a perverted way. I'm saying I like hugs.
I was there. It was a chaste, platonic hug. It was a beautiful thing.
Good you just God, Henry.
We had to drag you. I was like, where do I remember Dr. Laycock from? Oh, yeah, dragging him off a Kissel. That's right. Oh, we had to have him pounded when we watched and being like, it's a natural reaction. Yes, he has to act like this.
Rise from your grave.
All right, there it was, our interview with Dr. Joseph Laycock. That was fun stuff.
I wanted more ghosts, but I understand that you can't provide them if you don't got them.
That, you know what I mean? Ghosts are very difficult. Yeah, you can't produce them.
But because, and I do believe it's partially because they're not supposed to be recorded. It's supposed to be a unique psychic experience between you and everybody else. But all the other cucks in this world won't accept witness testimony as evidence.
Sure, sure. Preaching to the choir on that one, buddy.
Get over to your house. You're sick and weak now, so this is a good time for me to attack you.
Uh-huh. All right, everyone.
Thank you all.
Can you not get me, please? Thank you all so much for giving to our Patreon. We really, I mean, honestly, again, without you, none of this is possible. So we love you very much. And is there anything else? We have our special coming out. You probably already heard the episode, but if you did not hear it, last podcast proper, we have a special coming out here within the next couple of weeks, and we're really excited about it. We filmed it in Chicago, and it was a really great time. So I think you guys will love it at $6.66, and hopefully it can help you survive the holidays. And
we think you'll like it. I think it's a lot of fun. We had a good time doing it.
Yeah.
And I want to do it again. I want to get out there again, Kiesel.
Uh-oh, and that accent is alluding to something from next year.
And guess what? We're going to be going to a place where people sound like this all the time. And you're going to love me when I get in here something like this.
Oh, they're going to kill us. They're going to kill us. All right, everyone, thank you for listening. Hail yourselves.
Hail Satan.
Magustalations.
Hail me. Thank you for your money.
Thank you.
And again, remember, it's only 66.6 easy payments of 15 grand. To give us $1 million, and then it's Six Flags on Us.
Six Flags on Us. It's perfect.